Frank, trust us. So.
Frank in Cincinnati on EWTN.com. You're up next. Hello, Frank. You're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Trent.
Hello. Why are you an atheist or an agnostic?
Well, actually, let me better define your argument. You do know the difference, definition-wise, between a deist and a theist, do you not?
A theist is someone who believes God exists, but he interacts with the world in some way or has an interest in it.
Well,
a deist.
Hey, Frank. Frank, you know what? We're playing a little bit of gotcha here. Let Trent finish his answer.
Theism is the idea that God is unlimited being, and so he sustains the universe and interacts in some way with it. Deism is the idea there is a God that created the universe, but either no longer interacts with it or has no interest in it. That's roughly the definitions.
Essentially, you're close. I mean, deist I would define as a prime mover, someone who had a plan, who executed the universe, the known cosmos. A theist, on the other hand, is a personal God.
Great.
And
hey,
so the word anti-theist is kind of not only just kind of a misnomer, but it's hard to define. So
Frank,
from a definition standpoint,
Frank, we can play Roger's thesaurus for a long time, but really I want to get back to the question that we're asking, and Trent just repeated: are you an atheist or an agnostic, and if so, why?
Or a deist, possibly.
Or a deist.
Okay, well, I guess to start the conversation, so you don't just because I have a lot to say, is that I would be an answer. I'm an atheist. I don't believe in a personal God.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Why don't you believe in a personal God?
Well, first of all, it's an unfalsifiable argument. Either side, to prove the existence of God, a personal God, or to not, it's there's no evidence to prove either way. There's no evidence for the existence of God.
Frank, it's kind of just, this is sort of the kiss and cousin of Trent, have you stopped beating your wife? There's no evidence for God.
Yeah, okay, so because I'm going to ask the follow up question, Frank. How do you know, when you say there's no evidence for God, that's so interesting to me. Yeah, why
do you. Cite me the evidence. Cite me one argument.
What?
Cite me one argument for God's existence.
Okay, first, let me say this. Can there be evidence for something, but it doesn't necessarily prove the thing exists?
Which is what I said. It's an unfalsifiable argument.
No, Frank, here's the thing. I find many atheists do this. They say there's no evidence for something, but treat evidence as something is only counts as evidence.
Well, give me the evidence. One piece of evidence, please.
Okay.
We could crank through a lot of proofs for God.
All right. Well, I can talk about one. That's fine. But it's just interesting for me that you just say you've made a knowledge claim. There's no evidence. And you must have known this before you talked to me. I just want to know how you got to that point, like how you got there.
Yeah, but you didn't answer my question. I asked you to give me one argument or case for the existence of God.
Fine. Okay, I will happily do that. And then I want you. Yeah, it's just funny that you put that claim out there, but you haven't defended it. So yeah, I would say one piece of evidence for God is that we have good evidence that all of reality, space, time, matter, and energy began to exist at a point in the finite past. And so there must be a cause for all of reality. And this cause, if we do a conceptual analysis of it, it cannot be part of space or time, because those things came into existence at one point. This cause would be immaterial and eternal, not bounded in any way. And so that pushes forward to the idea of what we would call God, a necessary being or an uncreated being. And then I might put other aspects of reality itself that tell us more about this creator. The fact that there are orderly laws that are universal shows there's some kind of plan involved, and that leads towards that the creator is a planner or a designer. And the existence of moral truth shows that this creator is goodness itself and desires we ought to be a certain way. Now, here's my thing. I would say that is at least evidence. It may not be persuasive to some people, but it's at least something to debate, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Certainly something to debate, but sure. I would propose that that's not evidence. It's an opinion. And so I could make an equal argument for how the universe came to existence in terms of theoretical physics. If you read Lawrence Krauss's book,
I have read Lawrence Krauss. I've read Lawrence Krauss's book, and I've also read the rebuttals from people like David Albert, who's not religious, who's another theoretical physicist, who says that Krauss does a bait and switch in his book. He says he'll explain where the universe, how the universe came from nothing, and then he just defines nothing as a quantum vacuum and never explains where the quantum vacuum came from or why it exists. So that would be my thoughts on Krauss on that.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that when I was asking you a question, I don't mean to dwell, you know, long into this call, but, you know, it used to be that the best argument was that what could create all this, you know, complex organic matter. Well, now we know. Darwin told us what it was.
I would disagree with you, Frank. That is a misnomer.
So you don't believe in evolution?
No, I do believe in evolution, but I don't think that's been the best argument for the existence of God.
Well,
in fact,
I'm saying it was the best argument.
Frank,
now
we're getting... multiple interventions here
on our answers.
This is
another... I almost want to write a book called The Myths of Atheism. This is like myth number five, the idea that the best argument for the existence of God was William Paley's 18th century watchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you found a watch. It's complex. Must have a maker. Hey, look at that beaver. He's more complex than a watch. He must have a maker.
Why look at that? A universe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But we don't argue the universe resembles a clock or arguing by analogy. Rather, I'm arguing first, if something comes from absolute nothing, not just from a quantum vacuum or something like that, as Krauss would put forward, absolute nothing has no room in it for any kind of scientific explanation. Second, the existence of a universe with finely ordered laws that allow evolution to take place, that points towards a lawgiver than just something that's completely random.
Frank,
well, guess what? There's a science argument against that. It's called multi-universes. Have you heard of the anthropic principle?
Yes, I have heard
There's probably an infinite number of universes with different scientific laws.
Frank, hold on a second. Frank, we're really trying to go back and then forth and then back and forth. We have dealt with the multi-universe or shorthand multiverse theories many, many times, string theory, and not just the Krauss and his detractors. But Trent isn't saying there's a multiverse. Doesn't that kick the problem down the avenue?
It does kick it down for multiple reasons. Number one, we are still left with the question, why does the multiverse exist at all? When we look at contemporary physics, but also from philosophy, there's good reason to think, even if our universe came from a previously existing one, there has to be a terminating point for all of this in the past. Number two, there's an interesting objection to the multiverse. So we say, it's so improbable, these laws. We just live in a multiverse. That explains it. But if I got 10 royal flushes in a row, I couldn't say, maybe this is the universe in the multiverse where I win that way. Well, no, you would think there was design. Much the same way I think the design in our universe that points towards the ability for life to evolve point is evidence of a designer.
Yeah. And Jimmy Akin in the May 2000... Catholic Answers Magazine covers this, called What the Heck is the Multiverse, by Jimmy Akin. Thanks for the conversation, Frank.